I really want to finish up this chapter of these shiurim of the causes of the Holocaust. But we mentioned last week a few different ideas, and they need explanation because on the surface the concept seems difficult to understand. Mentioned the timing of Avraham Grudzinski. I'm not going to go into detail in each one. Each one speaks for itself. Just to go over them quickly, Emuna, that there was a lack or a weakening in Emuna, in Shmira Shabbos, in Taras HaMishpacha, in Kashrus, Ribbis, taking interest in education, Bittul Torah, Avas Reya, Chesed. People were not satisfied in the places where they were had extravagant lifestyles. They were not mishtapik, bitochen. People did not bitochen, and Eretz Yisrael. Those were the 12 things that he mentioned. And again, he was a person who was killed in the Holocaust. So okay, they speak for themselves. Not going to go into detail in them. Other ideas, though, have nothing to do with specific averas that either amassed over generations or whatever and finally resulted in what the Torah says happens when people do averas. The whole tochacha is like that, so it's not something strange that calamities and terrible calamities can come because of averas. Torah says it opened. Right, that's the whole parashas HaTochach. But in any case, others say that that wasn't the case with the Holocaust. The Holocaust was an idea of Chevli Moshiach. Chevli Moshiach means the natural tsaris that will precede Moshiach coming. And others say that it's the Chofetz Chaim said that there's a lot of Gilgulim that have to come into the world and a lot of things that have to be rectified, neshamas have to be rectified, that come into the world and have to leave in a tragic way. That's the kapara for that neshama, and that's what happens. That's the terrible tragedy. Chofetz Chaim died before the actual Holocaust started. I think he died in 1933, but in any case, he already was talking about World War One, and he saw that there's going to be terrible, worse calamities coming than was World War One. And he also predicted that the place that would be safe is Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael would not be affected. In any case, so what does that mean? That, I mean, people, suffer because Yiddishkeit in other places had to be safe. So these people were like korbanos for the sake of Bechon Wasserman before he was killed. So he asked to speak to the people who were going to be shot, in Slabodka he was, and he told them, we are considered like korbanos for the sake of American Jewry, that it should be able to survive, and therefore a korban has to be brought with the purest intentions, so nobody should have any bad thoughts before they're killed. They should go al kiddush Hashem with only good machshavas tahoros. That's what he told the people. So he obviously held that the people who were killed there were somehow some kind of korbanos, right, for people in other places, for Yidden other places to be able to survive. What's the idea, though? I mean, the person's a korban for other people, whatever. How does that work? It sounds very Christian. It doesn't sound too Jewish. But the idea is that you have to know that there's two different cheshbonos, and also children or gilgulim, whatever. The idea being the following: there's two cheshbonos over here, and I try to give it maybe in a easier way to understand by a more contained situation, not something so nebulous like the Holocaust. You have what's it called? Children, it says, sometimes are punished for the sins of the parents. Parents sin, the children suffer because of it. Now, on the surface, that sounds very unfair. Why should a child suffer because his parents sinned? And secondly, it's connected apostle. Lo yumsu avos abonim, lo yumsu avos. You know, the Gemara says it's talking about Aedis. It's not talking about people dying for other people's sins, it's talking with other people's testimony. But the Maaseh, the Gemara understands it Pashut also. So it has a simple meaning besides the Midrashic meaning. So then it also doesn't seem fair. So the way it's explained is the following. No child is punished because of parents' sins. But children sometimes, for whatever reason beyond our understanding, need Yisurim or need to die young. Whatever. That neshama needs that. Right? Or either because it's a Gilgul, it was here once, came back, needed to live for 5 years and leave this world in a painful way, and that was the tikkun that neshama needed for something in a previous life. Or sometimes it's nothing to do with a tikkun for a previous life. Sometimes the Rabban Shem said there are neshamas that have to come into this world for minutes, seconds. It says David HaMelech was supposed to live for 1 second. The Mauritian gave him 70 years. Whatever that means is beyond our comprehension, but at least the concept, you see, it's possible for a neshama to have been created, to come into this world, and not to have any mitzvahs, no Torah, what's it called, totally not responsible, and yet that neshama is part of the whole complex system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and it has to fit in, it has to be there. For whatever reason. Could be to affect other people should be able to mekayim chesed through that neshama, or be affected through that. There are a million different reasons why, but those are beyond our comprehension. But the concept is there. It's possible for a neshama to come into this world, not for its own bechira, just because the Rabban Shem said the universe, eternity needs that neshama to, it fits some part of the machine, of the complex process that the Rabban Shem created. And so again, there's reasons why that specific neshama had to come into this world for the time that it did, leave the time that it did, the way that it did. On the other hand, sometimes it could be not a punishment at all, it could be a reward, for that neshama to be able to come into the world the way it did, and even to leave in a tragic way. We don't know why, the reason for the neshama itself. On the other hand, that neshama has to come through some family. So the Rabban Shlom matches up neshamas that have to come in, right, with families that either need a nisayin, an extra schar, or a punishment. All are impossible. So why did this 3-year-old that had to get Rachmana Litzlan a terrible terminal disease and leave the world early, why was he born to these parents specifically? He could have been born to any parents. That neshama had to come into this world. Why dafka to these parents? So it could be because the Rabban Shlom knew these parents can handle such a situation. For them it'll be a tremendous nisayan, meaning for the good, and give them extra schar in Olam Haba. So he made that neshama that needed this tragic scenario be born to these parents. That's one possibility. Or another possibility, these parents deserve a punishment, and this is their punishment. But it's not that the child is suffering in order to punish the parents. Child has his own cheshbon. Why dafka these parents? That's the parents' cheshbon. But not that the child is suffering because of the parents. The Rabban Shem just made a good shidduch between this child that needed those yisurim for his neshama and the parents who needed an onish or a kapara or a nisayin or a reward or whatever. Could be it's a reward to the parents. Not dafka, that's a punishment. Right? Having to deal with a child like that, right, could elevate the parents tremendously if they're the kind of parents who could handle it. And give them extra schar in Olam Haba. So the Rabban Shem gave dafka these parents because he knows they can handle it, and different parents may not be able to handle it. So all of these reasons are not to say that some people were killed, tortured for the sake of other people. No, everybody has their own cheshbon. But l'maisa, since the world needed, in other places, needed this Isauris, and l'maisa was Isauris, l'maisa, the Holocaust, at least in its after the initial Holocaust, made a tremendous roshim on Klal Yisrael, right, and on individual people too. So even though these people had their own specific cheshbon, the Rabbanu Shel Olam, what's it called, made it work out that all these people needed that cheshbonos. For instance, Chofetz Chaim brings down a Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, that a lot of the people were killed during the Gzeiros of Tach and Tav. I think we mentioned last week, were people who were Ovid Avodah Zarah in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, never got their kapara, had to come back in this world and leave the world in torturous ways for this kapara. So they all were people recycled, if you want to understand it like that. And therefore the Gzeres Tach V'Tat, right, accomplished that, but also accomplished other things. Why Dafka, these neshamas at this time, and that it should affect other people and affect Klal Yisrael, all was made together. So it's not that these people died because of how it affected Klal Yisrael. The same thing with Rabbi Maz's thesis, that Judaism was waning in every place in the world, and if the Rabban Shem didn't do something drastic, then what's it called, it would have deteriorated even more. And the Rabban Shem said it's impossible. Klal Yisrael can't be lost. So sometimes you need a very invasive and painful operation to save the patient. And sometimes the operation, you have to cut away even good flesh along with the bad. So that's what he said happened. And he shows in this book, with fury poured out, he has a haskama for Moshe, but it's not too much of a haskama. So Moshe wrote. It's with feeling of happiness I take this opportunity to write a few words on the nature of Haskama for my Talmud and my dear friend Harav HaGaon Rav Dov Ber Maza, who had the privilege to write a sefer about the destruction in Europe and the new growth of Torah in America and our Holy Land. And though customarily I'm careful not to give Haskamas for Svarim Bahashkafa, nevertheless I requested my grandson Harav HaGaon Rav Mordechai Tendler to study carefully every chapter of the sefer. He did so and he transmitted to me the general content of each chapter, and I expressed my opinion about them by way of my grandson to the author, who changed a number of things because of my words. So that's the thing. Ramosha, I think, in the theater says he doesn't understand English, so he couldn't really read the book. But he asked, what's it called? He asked his grandson to read it and to tell him what exactly was in a sikum, in a short, right, what it was about. He basically shows chapter after chapter that Judaism before the Holocaust in Europe, in Germany, in England, was on the way down. And I remember that when I was in Miami, they had an exposition in the University of Miami on Polish Jewry before World War II. And I went to see it. They had films, they had photographs, and it was eye-opening, because you usually think that, you know, Polish Jewry, Eastern European Jewry before the war was like 99% from, and really, you know, the shtetl, whatever. But what I saw there was not like that at all. It was, what you saw was a grandfather who was Hasidish, you know, in a Hasidish garb, and then a father who was dressed more modern, with still with a yarmulke on his head, and children who looked like they were completely estranged from Yiddishkeit. So already you could see Yiddishkeit was on its way down, that the winds of socialism and secular Zionism and Haskalah were pulling people away from Yiddishkeit tremendously. And in every family there were children that were pulled away to all these different philosophies, and ended up estranged from Yiddishkeit completely. So he shows, Ramesh, historically, chapter after chapter, how Yiddishkeit was faring in each place in the world, and is on its way down. And if something drastic didn't happen, it would have continued like that, deteriorating and deteriorating. And the Holocaust, the Maisa, turned things around. It sent an influx of Gedolim, Sridei HaPleita, to America with a tremendous burning desire to build up what was destroyed, which they did, and therefore Torah flourished in America in an unbelievable way, right? And because of the Holocaust, not despite the Holocaust. And in Eretz Yisrael, the same thing. Torah here grew, and is still growing, not necessarily despite the Holocaust, but because of the impetus of the Holocaust. So that's what the Rabban Shem did. But that doesn't mean to say that all those people suffered in order for this. Each person had his own personal cheshbon. There was a reason why each person had to die the way that he did, the time that he did, or whatever. That's a separate thing. But why Lamaisa, the Rabban Shem, brought all these separate things together in this massive Holocaust was also for the sake of Klal Yisrael, for the sake of other places, for the sake of Jews in other places or whatever. It's just a shidduch. This has its cheshbon, but it can happen in a vacuum. It doesn't have to happen where it affects other people. The Rabban Shalom makes it work out who it affects, and the need for the intrinsic thing to work together in order to achieve the ends that the Rabban Shalom had. But after everything is said and done, bottom line in all of this, and this is where we're going to end this part, and next week we'll start with Shilas and Tshuvas of the Holocaust. Bottom line is that, was there a reason for the Holocaust? Yes. Do we know it? No. Can we say ideas that will give us chizuk? Yes, as long as we know that we're not saying things that we are saying are for sure, nor that point a finger of guilt at anybody, because they're mainly that we can get the hisoris from it, not to say for sure this is the reason and therefore this is the cause and these people are to blame for whatever happened or whatever. That's impossible. So we've said many different possibilities, and hopefully the purpose was to be mechazik us, knowing that yes, tsaris happened because of averis, and if you are nisorer from a tsara that happened and realize that these are the kinds of averis that could cause such a thing, then you'll be more careful and take a lesson from the Holocaust, which is a very very intense lesson, to be a positive thing. And that in itself is a schus for lili neshamos, those people who died, but now their memory is being used in a very positive way. That in itself is what's called as a kapara for them. That in itself is a reason for ilui nishmas. Okay. Next week there won't be a shir, and the week after that there won't be a shir. The week after that there may be a shir. I don't know what time I'm coming back. I'm coming back on Wednesday. If I come back in a reasonable time to give the shir, we'll have a shir that the third Wednesday from tonight.
So this will be where you can ask questions.
What? Yeah, it's not so much. What I'm going to do is go through a lot of halachic questions that were asked before the Holocaust, during the Holocaust, and after the Holocaust.
Because we lost a lot of Jews because of the horrible way they were killing the ones which were eliminated. How can Hashem see this and don't know anything about it? So this was a lot of people. You see, there's a lot of things written up about this. The people were very, very.
I understand
all this,
and then
they lost everything. They said, "I can't be. You just can't."
Anybody who lost their emuna because of the Holocaust, you can't point a finger of accusation at them, because you can understand.
Yes.
If it says that just being a poor person can make a person give up his emunah, surely these kind of things. On the other hand, there are people who became frum because of what they saw in the Holocaust. They realize this can't be just natural. There must be something divine behind it, because otherwise it couldn't have happened. Like Hitler's life was saved how many times, right, when he should have been killed. And so the fact that it was so unnatural means that the Rabban Shalom had some reason. How could the Rabban Shalom let such a thing happen? So that we spoke about way back, right? That we don't see the whole picture, and there's more than just in this world, and even death in this world is not the end. There's a whole eternity after that. And sometimes for a person's neshama, it's better he leaves this world even in a tragic way, but for eternity, that's what he needed to have what's it called, Olam Haba. So it's like an operation that maybe on the time being is very, very painful, and the operation may mean that the person has to lose his life in this world. But the ultimate purpose of that operation is that he should be able to continue living, walking now, living in on a spiritual plane.
Because a lot of people like Hashem said, "I'm mentioned that they were losing the Yiddishkeit very fast." Leaving it all this, so this is also caused it.
Yeah, so individually wise, yeah, it's true that there are many individuals who, because of all these sorrows, went away from Yiddishkeit. Even people are full. That's on an individual level. But he shows that on a klal level, right, Torah was strengthened in all the places after the Holocaust where before it was going down, now it was going up. except in Europe. Europe obviously was destroyed. But in other places, we got a shot in the arm where now it was possible for it to rejuvenate. That's what he said. So the cheshbon of the klal overrolls the cheshbon of the prati. You know, you can't blame these people because nobody can speak about somebody else unless they were in the same situation, and it's understandable people in that situation could lose their amun. It's other of it. It's a wonder that people didn't lose their amun. People did.
But also the fact that so many people saw what was going on, and yet you see, we're not created to see these terrible atrocities.
Okay, that's the nature of a person also. People like to pretend it's not happening, right? And they close their eyes to it. And even people who are suffering get used to the suffering where it becomes bearable. And nobody could understand how in the world they could survive for a minute in that, and people survive for years like that.
Yeah,